I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are back here at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. With me here at the U.S. Forum is Lester Spence, Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Hopkins, and his father, Vaughn Spence, both Detroit men, both here attending this forum. And good to have you both here at the same time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
When I saw you two together, I said the first thing I have to do is get the two of you in a room and have this conversation. Because you represent a lot together, this world of Detroit. You're both really strong intellects, grew up in this town, and I wonder what both, just in terms of generationally and being Detroiters, what you think about what's taking place here. Yvonne, talk about it, because you've been through the Ford Motor Company, you know, and all the rest, and just recently retired. And
I think it's Mark. It's like almost a rebirth of the activism that Detroit has always been noted for, from United Negro Improvement Association of Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad. Republic of New Africa, the League of Revolutionary Workers, Walter Reuther and the UAW. It captivated the country because of the great migration coming from the South in the 20s and the 30s to get jobs, leaving an agricultural base. And it meshed together what we call Detroit. It always was a neighborhood process. So I grew up with Italians, Polish, Czechoslovakians, all types of different background and nationalities of people. We all meshed together to make cars, and then and at one time in World War II to make bombs.
Lester, you always talked about your dad as a kind of as an intellectual figure in your life and a big part of your growth, and talking to him earlier, we'll bring a little bit more about his life out in a second. But and so it's grown up in this intellectual working class world that you did, and now you're here.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, so I was educated formally at the University of Michigan, and before that, I went to private Catholic school for high school. Went to public school only really K through five. After that, I was just straight public, private school. But a lot of my politics, a lot of my sensibilities I actually got from my dad. And it's not like we necessarily had a quote unquote Brady Bunch type father son relationship. I mean, because for the most part, real talk, I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, my dad worked. My dad was in the plants, right? So I came home, he was going to sleep. When I was waking up, he was gone, right? The weekends, you know, he mostly worked overtime to put us through school, right? So it wasn't like we would sit down and read the paper together. Like, son, oh, what do you think about this? It was really more about me kind of being around, and to the extent he talks about politics, picking that up. And then as I grew older and his workload decreased a bit, you know, I was able to see two things. One is we were able to have those political conversations. But two, I worked the summer of 89, I worked painting pipes at an oil refinery. And what I was able to do in that moment was actually see what that type of labor was like day in and day out, right? And because it's one thing to know what your dad does. And my dad didn't work in the oil refinery, but he worked at the plant doing kind of similar stuff. But it's another thing to actually be in the mix, and then you understand all of the stuff you went through, you know, as a kid. So it was those two things that really made me see things in a really, really different way.
This conference being here in Detroit, I think, is fairly significant. I mean, this is a town that has a long history of radical and revolutionary politics. You experienced it in the plant, the League of Revolutionary Workers, was it?
Yes. Detroit had always had a unique place in actually the world civilization, because of the fact that we had stalwarts that were in revolutionary movements that stand head and shoulders above anybody in any other place. Dr. Grace Boggs and Jimmy Boggs, General Baker, Ken Cockrell, Justin Rabbis, the Reverend Albert Clegg, Republic of New Africa, just a myriad. We had forces from a religious point of view, forces that were in the plant, educational forces that meshed together that make this tapestry of Detroit. The thing about Detroit was that since to work in the plant, you had to work at it as a unit. Henry Ford understood that with the invention of the assembly line. So therefore, a couple things would take place. One, if you're working side by side, you have to be paid the same thing, the same wage. So blacks coming up from the South were paid the same as whites
that was
in the plant.
Yes.
Also, with the invent of the starting, what this forum is about, the agitation of the power structure, the unions, so Walter Reuther and his brother Victor, they were skilled trades. They can go around and talk to other people and make them aware of the plight of the conditions that they were in without them even knowing they were in bad shape. So this started the organizing structure. So it's a cadre of from grandfather, father, and like my son that were part of organizing, and that is the Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, so what I'm thinking about, I mean, when you think about that moment, right, I mean, you literally have a revolutionary new, you have an economy that was unlike anything that the world had ever seen, right? I mean, you step into these plants, even now, the plants are the size of cities, right? And anything that goes on in a city, you got going on in the plant, both good and bad, right? You got people, you know, organizing gambling in the plants, people organizing prostitution in the plants, people organizing politically in the plants, right? And then that organizing process, learning to work side by side with people who aren't like you, that ends up making it a lot easier for black nationalists to organize, a lot easier for white anarchists to organize, a lot easier for Marxists to organize, a lot easier for integrationists to organize, right? So when the United States Social Forum decides to come here, and these people are so young, they don't really quite understand it, they're actually here at ground zero, not because Detroit has been so hard hit, but because the modern world as we understand it politically and economically in many ways starts literally in Detroit. First freeways, Detroit. First malls, Detroit. First union organizing, more or less, Detroit. First black nationalist cells, Detroit, more or less, right? It starts here.
It is significant, and I think it's also significant that we're sitting in this forum. I'm curious what the two of you have thought by the sessions that you've either run or sat in while you've been here, the people you've observed and talked to, because I'd like to hear your observations of that. I mean, just you both come from the same place but very different places, and everybody here is old enough, Vaughn, to be your grandchild, a lot of them, you know.
Yeah, well, Mark, well, what's amazing to me about it is what you just said, the youth that's involved. I had a chance to experience I think it was Monday night, Detroit has the fireworks. It's one of the greatest shows on earth, my son called it. And here's a million people of all different backgrounds come on the riverfront in the city of Detroit. Detroit Finance can get the people in and out. And at 12:30, they sweeping it up. But it's an amazing show. So a lot of the naysayers say, well, Detroit can't do this and can't do this. I would put Detroit up to any city that can, once they given a chance and a goal they can see, they can achieve it. Now, this is the thing about the social forum is that we have to, it's a new day now. It's a new day. It's a new day in the automobile plants. It's a new day in education. It's a new day in the hospitals. We need forces that are going to achieve the good day. The good day that is due to Americans, and that's what this forum is about, in my opinion.
The panel I was just on was about education, right? And about the effects of neoliberalism on education, primarily K through 12, but to a certain extent the university, and then how to combat that. Now, one of the things that neoliberalism does, or to the extent that it quote unquote does anything, is it really, the way it's embedded in our society is we think there is no other alternative, right? And it's not even articulated as if it's political, like, for example, testing, like standardized testing. We don't think of that as political. We think of that as like, wow, this is the best way to get results.
Accountability, right? We think. Right?
Accountability. We think about, we don't really think about charter schools. Well, we think about charter schools kind of political, but it's just, like, that's just the best way to produce outcomes, right? The school superintendent is now a CEO.
Right.
We don't even think about that move. Like, oh, well, you know, it's like a business anyway. So we've got all these politics that are deeply embedded, and we don't even understand them as political. The benefit of the United States Social Forum is you got all these people who understand these things as being political, and they're able to articulate that, and then able to articulate alternatives, right? So what it does for people like us is it helps us know, it gives us different ideas about how to organize and inform in our own places. Two is it convinces us that we're not alone. Right? Because, I mean, we've had these discussions. You fight this, and you guys have been fighting far longer than me. You know, you fight these battles, and at some point in time, you're like, damn, I'm the crazy one. Right? Or I'm the one that's alone. I'm the only one who thinks like this. And then you go to that march, and you see blocks upon blocks upon blocks of people. Right? I mean, that's incredibly powerful. And that's what, so the trick is getting that United States Social Forum energy to connect with the fireworks energy my dad talked about. Because those two populations, like, nobody in Detroit knows this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The media's pretty much cut all coverage of it. So how do we get this energy to connect with that energy?
I mean, that is the question. I mean, it, in one sense, you can make it feel like it's isolating, but it's not. I mean, you've seen lots of things go on in this town for a long time. And I think one of the interesting things here as a sidebar, just I want people to know, is that you were in the service in the 60s, came back, got your bachelor's degree, and then had to lie you didn't have it to get your job in the auto mill.
Right, right. the thing about being a Detroiter, the automobile plants always was, in some cases, a place of first resource of a job, but also a place of last resort. So it was always understanding that you could go to the automobile plants. And at the time, in the 60s, well, the automobile plants was gearing up. Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler was selling every car to go out the door, even if they had a boat rattling in the door. The foreign companies hadn't got a toehold into the market yet. So when I came out of service and found myself without a job and needed a job, I went to the automobile plants. Now, I understood that I just couldn't put on there well, I got a bachelor's of science degree, so I just told them I finished high school, and they hired me. And after getting in the plant, knowing what I wanted to do, to take care of my family and give them opportunities that was afforded to me, and I wanted them the same one that was afforded to them. So I became a skilled tradesman at Local 600, the cradle of unions in this country, and especially in the Ford Motor Company. The Rouge, the complex at one time in 1939 had 140,000 workers. Every bus line in the city of Detroit ended or started at the Rouge plant. The tentacles of power stretched from the Rouge plant all over this area. Detroit was Michigan. Detroit was the United States. As my son said, that the first light, also the first freeway, structure of what they would call a burial society, as the Europeans and the blacks, the people from Appalachian coming up in the Great Migration in the 20s and the 30s, the forerunner of the Union, what it would call a burial society, where they would bury their brethren. And so they would meet at different halls and would have funerals. Well, this was the forerunner of unionization. And with the blacks coming up from the South with escaping terror, they had a welcome arms to have getting paid the same wages as white, and then having whites call them brothers. So this was an integral part, and it's the reason why the UAW is what it is today.
I wonder this, that energy you talk about, that and it was a very different struggle, but the energy you talk about is in the auto workers. And the interracial nature of that struggle. There was a lot of racism in the auto workers, like everywhere else. But I mean, that the interracial nature of that, and creating this powerful union movement that helped change the world, and even became involved in the civil rights movement. Walter Ruther, President of the Union, walked with Martin Luther King. I mean, it was something that, he in 1948 is when I said the first guy who talked about we should have a single payer system in this country. Tried to convince Harry Truman. Harry Truman even wanted it, but then they lost to who ran GM, and they weren't going to have Smith. We were not going to have a single payer. We'll do it ourselves, and we see the result of that. So, but I wonder if you see any similarities, the two of you, or polarities, differences between what's growing now and the movement that in some ways gave birth to it 50, 60, 70 years ago. I mean, talking about where this world is now and what this U.S. social reform represents, that just jumped out at me as you, Vaughn, were telling the story about the beginnings of these unions.
So there are a few really, really big differences, right? So one tremendous difference is that everybody that was working class in Detroit, more or less, worked in one of those huge plants. Everybody, right? Now, granted, again, because the plants are the size of cities themselves, it wasn't like we were all, they were all together. It wasn't like they were all doing the same thing. But the fact that they all worked in that one place, it gave them a shared connection to the engines of production that made certain types of organizing much more likely, right? Whereas in this context, we've got so many people who are either unemployed or employed in the service industries, which is a different animal. It makes it difficult to organize on the ground, right? So, and relatedly, another difference is that the way that capital worked was different, in that you could actually have a strike that worked, that really did shut down the entire city, right? That really did shut down the way a corporation worked. Whereas in this case, it's not clear to me that those same tactics are as effective, right? So we've still got a significant amount of power that our forerunners didn't have, like the way we can connect across like almost instantaneously through the internet, the way we are able to share information, strategies and tactics, et cetera, et cetera. But we still haven't quite caught up. What the unionists were able to do was to quickly catch up to the moment they were living in and devise strategies and tactics that were appropriate. It's not clear that we've quite caught up to where we are yet. to devise strategies and tactics that are appropriate to this moment.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and also it's almost we're getting a do-over. In the 40s with Roosevelt being the president, and the whole world, and especially in the United States, racism was rampant. And A. Philip Randolph told the president that, hey, you got to do the right thing about what's happening on the social sphere in the United States. Well, Roosevelt understood that the only way he could do something was he had to be made to do it. And that's what he told A. Philip Randolph. The UAW just elected Brother Bob King as their leader, and he's giving the same message to the UAW brothers and sisters, is that they have to take it to the streets and have a moral and social compass that they had lost in the previous years, making X number of dollars. You may think you middle class or Republican or whatever label, but basically, if you work for somebody, you're a worker, and worker need health care just like anybody else. And once that's threatened, it brings people together, and that's what we face now. And that's one good thing about the social forum being in Detroit. Detroit faces is a mirror image of United States, and what happens in Detroit will happen in Nevada.
This has been wonderful. I want to do more of this with you all, so we have a chance. It's just been just love the idea of the two of you together talking. It's this spectrum of ideas that is just very profound and very powerful. Go ahead.
You know, this is, you know, we don't really, so now that I'm older and now that I have children of my own, actually two more than dad had, it's like there's some things you can teach me, but now, like, with five kids, there's like a whole set of stuff.
Dad had three,
you know, a bunch of things dad can't really talk to me about. But this is really a blessing. You know, this is really a blessing. I've been meaning to try to tape us somehow, to tape these conversations, because time isn't really promised to anybody, right? And now that I'm on the other side of 40, I can understand that a lot more than I did when I was 25, right? So this has really been, I mean, the United States Social Forum is a blessing. It gives me an opportunity to come home and see my friends, but also gives me an opportunity to really talk with like-minded people about this other world. But it is really a blessing to be able to share this with my father. Thank you very much for taping this. This is a hell of a...
Yeah, and same here, Mark, and we really appreciate it afford us the opportunity to talk here together. But one thing should be mentioned, Dr. Lester K. Spence, a PhD from the University of Michigan, Von L. Spence, a factory worker, in 2010, that might not be a possibility anymore. So this social forum is going to try to correct some of the inadequacies that we find ourselves in.
The Spences, father and son, sons of Detroit, thank you so much for being here. As we've said over and over again in our conversations about the U.S. Social Forum, well over half, if not more than that, of the folks at this conference are young people in their teens, 20s, and 30s, and a huge number are teenagers who are social activists in their communities. One of the original groups doing that in America is the Algebra Project. A number of them came here to the U.S. Social Forum, and we had a roundtable with them just yesterday. Let's share part of that interview with you now. Let's get all your names. You are?
Marilyn Shaw.
Jasmine Washington.
Lacey Manee.
Malik Humbles.
Maggie Phillips.
You all went to the SNCC conference, right? Some of you went to the SNCC conference, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee 50th Union, right?
Yes. Well, it was awesome. I learned so much from the older people that that were doing stuff in the 60s. They were fighting for rights for black people. And I learned about their struggle and how we could be doing so much more, because they died on the front lines, while we need to be talking to more young people and building up leadership, and so that young people know about what's going on, because a lot of times young people are not doing nothing because they don't think anything's wrong. So we need to build up their awareness. So it taught me how how to strategically plan with young people with our organization. So it was just awesome. I was in, I was around a whole bunch of like, I don't know, like, what's the word? Wisdom, everything. I don't know. It was great.
That's interesting to me, because one of the things that hits me about this conference, I want to see what you all think about it, is that this place is full of younger people.
I think the youth are going to be the ones to make the change. So I think it's really important that, like, youth are here, especially in terms of, like, the different types of jobs that are available to us, that are going to be available to us after graduating high school or college. And the economy has changed. It's more, instead of manufacturing and an industrial economy, we have more of an information-based technology type of economy, where we're going to have to change and make demands on the people around us, on these corporations for jobs. And so I think the youth being out here is important, versus, like, the older people. They're still important, but...
Well, it just helps me understand that, like, there are young people that, there are some young people that know what's going on. It's just that there's not enough. And so I know, like, there's hope for everybody. So, you know, we're at our, you know, organization in Baltimore, and we're like, you know, we're the only people organizing around, you know, educational issues, but we're not. So this conference, this social forum, makes me, I guess, feel better about the work I'm doing, because it helps me see that other young people are fighting for educational rights. So we just got to get it out there to more young people.
This place is full of people who are your peers from all over the country, people who are struggling and doing stuff in different communities. I'm just curious who you've met, what you may have learned from them, what interactions you might have had with folks here from around America.
Well, during the NSBR workshop that I was just at, two guys was there talking about how the education here, how the education system here in Detroit is also messed up as the one in Baltimore. And it was interesting to hear him reference the school to prison pipeline, something that we was just campaigning for and still is campaigning for.
Campaigning against.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
We want to stop that pipeline. Right.
Yeah. But that was really an eye-opener, that it's not just, the school-to-prison pipeline is everywhere. It's not just Baltimore. So that was really important.
Well, we just had our peer-to-peer workshop, and there was a woman in there who was a teacher in New York City, and she was saying that, like, the youth need to be leaders, and that she enjoys the most when she, like, steps back and let the youth lead whatever it is. So I think, like, that's the most important thing that people need to realize. The youth are the leaders, and you can't, teachers and parents can't sit back and dictate to youth what to do, what to say, what to think. It has to be us who try to make a change and like, lead the organizations, lead in our jobs, lead in our communities, lead in schools.
I think this conference, well, this forum, excuse me, will be a great networking opportunity and also a great learning experience for everyone, because there are a lot of youth from different places here. And I know, coming here from Baltimore, I wasn't thinking that there would be as many youth who are as dedicated to the struggle and as dedicated to being here early in the morning and that sort of thing, you know. But they're here with, like, huge numbers and everything, and they're here, they're ready, they have their message, they know what they're trying to tell people, they know what needs to be supported, they're willing to support others. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to network with them so they can be a part of us ending our struggle, and as youth, ending the struggle that youth have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So I don't think there's anyone here who doesn't have something important to say worth listening to, because, you know, this is it. Like, it's the youth movement that needs to happen, and the social forum is one of the starting places where that can happen. So it sounds like it will be a great eventful weekend, that will make things so much better in the upcoming future, because the motto is, there's another world that the forum is going off of, and there really can be if the youth take their power and do something with it.
So finally, I'm curious what your vision is of what a world that you're struggling will look like.
Well, with the bottom line, I would like to see young people first with, like all the knowledge they need about the educational system. That's first. And then I would like to see young people with jobs in a knowledge-based economy. I would like to go to a school and see other students teaching other students, and they're learning. They're teaching, and they're learning, too. I would like to see, where we living in a world where people are, like, on one accord.
And also the same things, Mother said, I really like to see the school, like, people really, like, learning and not just on, like, the little, you know, middle school base, like, the eighth grade base. Like, we just learning a lot. But not just in, like, school, but, like, having, like this job, like, the BAP, having a job that's, like, that's helping you learn. Actually, more than in school, but just helping you learn also while you getting paid and stuff like that. I just like to see, like, a better, like, city, especially Baltimore.
I would like to see stronger communities where the whole community is involved in the schooling, more peer-to-peer teaching, more after-school programs that actually engage students to where they're not in the streets doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. Or from boredom, or just from not being engaged, or nobody cares about their interests. I would like to see a lot of youth just feel like they're appreciated, feel like they're needed, and feel like they're important. And youth not have to struggle to do anything but get a quality education and not have to worry about so many of the family issues that stop them from doing exactly what they have to do, with a lot of support from the community. Just like they say, like, it takes a village to raise a child, like, these communities need to be stronger so that the children can flourish.
I would like to see a world without segregation. I would like to see a world that's not separated by race, income, or any other thing that you can, education status, anything. I want to see a world where it's people. I want to see a world where everybody's just interacting with everyone. No one's in this area because they make this amount of money, and no one's in that area because they look a certain way or anything. Or not a world that's not segregated by religion. Because I believe something, I can't be around these people. I want to see a world where I can be around whoever I want to be, whenever I want to be.
Sort of what Lacey was saying, because I was thinking it when she was saying it, where the young people, there's not a need for you to get a job to help your family, but there's a want, you know, where the youth can take care of their older relatives and the older generation. But it's accessible, you know, jobs are accessible where you're learning something, where it's just not work because you have to make money, but it's something that you want to do. You don't see it as work, but it helps you progress in your life. And if there was a way to do that, the people would be knowledgeable of what's going on around them, and the people that represent them, the politicians, would be for those people, you know, because it seems like there's a lot of people in office, whether it's on the local level or the state level or on the federal level, who don't really care about their constituents. They just care about helping big businesses and helping other politicians. So I feel like if there was a more educated society, they would be wiser in their decisions that they make about who they elect, which would make the living conditions better all around. So that's what another world would look like for me.
Well, this is our conversation we've had with the members of the Algebra Project from Baltimore City up here at the United States Social Forum in Detroit. Folks, I'm glad you all are here. Thanks so much for your time. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. Find out more at www.hopkinsmedicine.org.